Well, again, this morning, it would be good if you had a bookmark in Exodus chapter 2 and another bookmark in Hebrews chapter 11. And we'll probably spend more time this morning in Exodus chapter 2. But we're going to think about that story through, as I said earlier on, the lens of Hebrews chapter 11 and the verse that we have in verse 23, where we read this, "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command." It's been great, hasn't it, going through Hebrews chapter 11 over these last months. Well, perhaps even a bit longer than that. And it's been great, hasn't it, to be reminded of some of these great people of the Old Testament. People like Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and Joseph. These great patriarchs, these great characters that we know a lot about from our Sunday school days, perhaps great landmark people in the Bible. And I trust that we've done that and we've tried to absorb some of the teaching and learn from it so that we might be a bit more like them. Hebrews 11 is this great gallery of characters, isn't it, of these people. But in a sense, when we get to verse 23, it sort of becomes even more real to us, doesn't it? Because when we get to verse 23, we get not to the great patriarchs, but to a nameless, ordinary couple. Not to some of these great heroes that we know so much about, but we come to a husband and wife who are, in a sense, totally anonymous. Now, we're not told in Exodus chapter 2 what their names were. We're not told in Hebrews chapter 11 what their names were. We are told elsewhere in the scripture, in Exodus chapter 6, actually, that their names were Jochebed and Amram. But you wouldn't know that from Hebrews chapter 11. They're ordinary people. They're an ordinary couple. They're a man and a woman seeking to live by faith. And they're not one of these great patriarchs about which we know so much. They're people like us. You see, living by faith is not just for the greats. It's not just for the great patriarchs of the Bible. Living by faith is for ordinary men and women, ordinary couples, just like Jochebed and Amram. And when we read Exodus chapter 2, when we read this great story, and we know this story so well, don't we? This is one of our Sunday school favourite stories, isn't it? This is the sort of story that you perhaps had a ladybird book which told, or a little book from the Christian bookshop which told you about it. This story is a story about faith, just as much as the story we looked at a few weeks ago when Abraham offered Isaac on the mountain under God's commands. And so this morning, that's what I want us to do. I want us to look at this couple in their own specific situation, and see what we can learn from them about what living by faith is like. How can we follow their example? And I think as we follow the story through, as we have it in Exodus chapter 2, we learn some really important lessons about what living by faith is all about. So firstly, living by faith involves looking for God's good in a world that is bad. Living by faith is about looking for God's good in a world that is bad. Now, my friends, this was a bad world that Jochebed and Amram lived in. We joined the Exodus story in chapter 2, didn't we? But it's good to remind ourselves what chapter 1 is all about. Chapter 1 is about ethnic cleansing. That's what Egypt was trying to do to the Israelites. We know how the story ends in Genesis. Jacob and Joseph and the family have moved down to Egypt. And there, God is making of them a great nation. And he's made of them such a great nation by Exodus chapter 1 that the king, the Pharaoh in the lands, is starting to worry. He's forgotten all the good that God did for them through Joseph years ago. He's forgotten all that. There's now such a large number of people that the Egyptians are worried that they could be taken over, that all of these Israelites who are in the lands could be like a fifth column, and the Egyptian nation could be destroyed. And so they have this plan, don't they? The first step of the plan is to encourage the midwives to report when an Israelite baby boy is born so that this child can be done away with. By the end of chapter 1, all of the baby boys who are being born are being thrown into the River Nile, aren't they? They're being destroyed. Why? Well, because Pharaoh wants to get rid of these Israelites. We know there's something else going on behind the scenes, isn't there? Satan wants to get rid of the line from which Christ will come. And we'll think about that next time or the time after, perhaps. And it's into this world that this married couple appear. And this married couple are in this situation. Imagine you're in this situation. You know that if you have a baby boy, you're going to lose that baby boy. It's going to be torn from you. It's going to be thrown into the river. It's going to either drown or be eaten by the crocodiles. What are you going to do in such a world? Are you going to have a child? Must have been a very real question to them, wasn't it? Should we have a child? Do we want to bring a child into a world like this? And then when Jochebed finds she's pregnant, you can imagine what must be going through her mind. Please, God, let it be a girl. Please, God, let it not be a boy. Can I have another girl after Miriam? Please, let it not be a boy. And then the moment comes when the baby is born, and it's a boy. And as soon as the baby is born, the death sentence is written all over him, isn't it? That's a bad world. This is an awful world to be born in. And yet, you see, this couple see God's good in this baby. Look at what verse 2 says. And if you've got an authorized version, it's probably more helpful than the new versions. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child. Now, all children are beautiful, aren't they? And even the ones that aren't beautiful, their mothers think they're beautiful, even if nobody else thinks they're beautiful, don't they? You never see an ugly baby, do you? So what does this verse mean, when she saw that he was a beautiful child? Well, I think if you've got an authorized version, it will say, when she saw that he was a good child, or a proper child. And it's interesting that the word good there is the same Hebrew word that's used in Genesis 1. Every time God makes something, he declares it good. And I think the writer, who we believe is Moses, is pointing us to something. You see, when this woman had this child, she didn't think of all the problem. She didn't think of all the terror. She didn't think of all the threats. She didn't, first of all, think of all the danger. She thought, this child is God's good. This is a child that God has given me. This is a child that God has created. This is a child that is good. And when she saw this child, she saw it as God's good in a world that had gone bad. This child was a beautiful child. This child was a proper child. This child was God's good. Children are God's good to us, aren't they? That's one of the things that the Bible teaches us. They have that lovely psalm, don't we, where it talks about children being a heritage from the Lord. That's a wonderful thing, isn't it? On this Father's Day, perhaps, when we think about families, we think about fathers and we think about children, we think about mothers and children. It's good, isn't it, to have children. Children are God's gift to us. And this couple, they saw this child as God's good gift to them. In the awful world in which they were living, beset with all the dangers and all the fears, they saw this as God's good gift. And so they set about protecting him and hiding him from the authorities. That's why they wanted to do right in a world of wrong. That's why the common and garden part of life, if you like, having children, they saw it as God's good. You know, if we're living by faith, that's what we should do as well. We should keep our eyes on the good. We should keep our eyes on God's good. There's a lot in the world that distresses us, isn't there? There's a lot in our lives, perhaps, that distress us. Lots of things that would drive us down. Lots of things that make us fearful and anxious. Lots of things that are evidence of the fallenness of human nature, and the world is going wrong. We need to be like Jochebed and Amram and say, well, what's God's good? What are the good things God has given me? What are the good things that I can focus on in the midst of a world that is wrong? That's what living by faith is. You know, God is a God who does all things well. The scripture tells, we read it, a wonderful sermon last Sunday evening from the visiting preacher here about Romans 8. All things work together for good to those who are called according to God's purpose. Are you looking for God's good in a world that's wrong? That's what Jochebed and Amram did. That's what we have to do if we're going to live by faith. But then secondly, living by faith always has an eye to how God has acted in the past. Living by faith always has an eye to how God has acted in the past. You see, you can only hide a baby for so long, can't you? They tend to be quite noisy, don't they? Can you imagine Jochebed and Amram in their little house? Every time somebody came and knocked the door, where's the baby? Get the baby away. Worried every time the baby cried that the neighbours would hear, that they'd tell on them, and the authorities would be round. And, well, it's not just the noise, is it? Babies tend to produce a lot of byproducts as well, don't they? And that has to be disposed of as well. There's all sorts of ways in which a child's presence could be giving itself away. And so the child gets to 3 months. What do we do now? Well, you notice in verse 3 what she does. And verse 3 is an act of faith, isn't it? She, when she couldn't hide him any longer, she makes an ark for him. Now, it's really important that we remember that what she makes is an ark. It's not a basket. It's not a Moses basket. Okay? Moses baskets are found in mother care, but they're not found in the Bible. It's not a Moses basket. It's an ark. And it's really important that we remember it's an ark. And if you've got a version with you this morning that says it's a basket or anything else, you're missing it. It's an ark. It's exactly the same Hebrew word here that's used in the Noah stories in Genesis 6 to 9. She makes an ark. This is ark 2, if you like. And in case you miss it, she daubs it with asphalt and pitch. Exactly the same as what Noah was told to do. Noah was told to build an ark, wasn't he? Told to build an ark to rescue all the animals. Told to build an ark for the preservation of his life and his family's life and creation. And he did that. And he was told to cover it with asphalt and pitch. Now, we've got no evidence that Jochebed and Amram were told that. But what are they doing? They're living by faith, aren't they? They're saying, how does God rescue his people? They don't have all of this Bible. They just have this much to go on, because that's as far as we've got in the Bible story. But they know that there was a time of great danger in the past, and God rescued his people through an ark. And so Jochebed, she seems to be the one who's taking control of the situation. Very often is, isn't it? The wife, the mother, who thinks straight and who acts in faith. When she couldn't hide him any longer, she builds an ark. She builds ark 2. She believes in the God who rescued Noah. And she knows that if God could rescue Noah and his family, he can look after little baby Moses. This ark is nowhere near as big, is it? Doesn't need to be, does it? All it's got to rescue, all it's got to keep safe, is one little baby. But she builds it according to the plan that God had given to Noah all those years before. And so she builds an ark because she remembers God is a God who doesn't change. God is a God who rescues his people by an ark. You know, my friends, when we get to the New Testament, we're reminded that there's a third ark. And his name is Jesus. When we get to the New Testament, we're reminded that the picture of God's salvation that's physical in the Old Testament with Noah, with God rescuing his people by virtue of an ark, becomes spiritual in the New Testament. And we need to trust in Ark Mark 3, the Lord Jesus Christ himself. Have you done that? You're trusting in him, the one who will save us from God's wrath, the one who will bring us through the awful flood of the judgment of God. But here, Jochebed builds Ark Mark 2 because, you know, that's what God did in the past. Now again, what's she doing? She's acting by faith. What's faith about? It's believing what you can't prove. Being sure, being certain of what you can't yet see. You see, she didn't know. We know the story. We know where her ends up. She didn't know that. God didn't promise her, as far as we can tell, that if she built an ark and put the baby in it, she'd be safe. He'd be safe. But you see, she believes in God. She believes in what she can't yet prove. She knows her Bible, or the little bit of the Bible that she had. And she says, I'm going to trust the God of Noah. I'm going to trust the God who rescued his people in the past. And so she constructs this little ark, puts the child in it, puts it in the river. Now, that's why we need to know our Bibles. That's why we need to know what God is like. You see, Jochebed and Amram know what their God is like because they know God's words. They know what God has done in the past. They could say with the hymn writer, each glad Ebenezer I have in review confirms his good pleasure to see me right through. That's why we need to know our Bibles. We need to know our God. We need to know how God has acted in the past. Because my situation might not be exactly the same as the situation of people in the past, but the principles carry forward. Because God doesn't change. She put her faith and her trust in the God who had rescued Noah in the past. And you and I should be like that. We should say, now, I'm in this difficult situation. I want to live by faith. Now, what principles are there in Scripture for living by faith? How has God acted in the past, in church history perhaps, with other Christians in the past? What can I learn from them? How can I put that into my life? That's what this woman and her husband clearly do. Are you doing that? Are you living by faith? Are you having an eye on the way God has acted in the past so that you might trust him for the future? Let's notice a third thing about what living by faith is all about. Well, living by faith is about trusting God in all situations, every situation. Now, in a sense, what she does next seems really strange, doesn't it? She lays it in the reeds by the river bank. Now, I think it's to do with the ark business. I think she's thinking about Noah and the story of God's protection of Noah in the past. And so the construction of an ark means it needs to go into the water. But, you know, putting it in the Nile was, in a sense, putting it right into the territory of wickedness. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. You see, this is a place that the Egyptians worshipped. The Nile was the main god that the Egyptians worshipped. The Egyptians had lots of gods that they worshipped. It's interesting how all of the plagues that, if you read on in the next few chapters in Exodus, they're all centered around things that the Egyptians worshipped. Egyptologists tell us that. All the evidence has been dug up now in Egypt, and you can see it for yourself. But all of those things, not just the Nile, but light and darkness and flies and frogs and the river becoming blood and so on. All of those things, in a sense, were God showing that he was more powerful than the gods that the Egyptians worshipped. But the main god that they worshipped was the Nile. After all, it was the Nile that flooded the fields, wasn't it? And gave them fruitfulness and gave them their crops. And the Nile was the thing, in a sense, that physically gave life to the nation and still does. If you've been to Egypt, maybe you've done a Nile cruise and you've seen it for yourself. But you see, in a sense, this was a spiritually dark place. because this was a pagan god. And not just was it a spiritually dark place, it was a physically dangerous place, wasn't it? It's interesting, if you read some of the commentaries, one of the things they argue about is whether there were crocodiles in the Nile at that time. Some of the commentators say, well, there probably wouldn't have been any crocodiles there. Others of the commentators say, well, there probably were crocodiles there. That's probably because the commentaries are written by men. I think if the commentaries were written by women, they would be much more concerned about the crocodiles. Even if there was any threat of a crocodile being there, you wouldn't put your baby in the Nile, would you? You wouldn't put it there, in that most dangerous of places. The Nile, the river, where Jochebed and Amram put their little baby, their precious son, is a place of spiritual and physical danger. But their faith is in God. Their faith is in the true God. Their faith is in a real God. You see, the Nile isn't a real God. The gods that the Egyptians worshipped, they're not real gods. That's why every one of the plagues, the God of Israel wins. That's why at the end of the story, or this bit of the story, it's the Egyptians that end up at the bottom of the sea and not God's people. Why? Because our God is the true God, the real God, the only God. And because he's the only God, he's the God of every situation and every place. Even this place of great spiritual darkness, even this place of great physical danger, God is sovereign over it. And as far as Jochebed and Amram are concerned, God is as much sovereign over the life of their precious little boy, if he's in the Nile, as if he's back in his bed in the house. You see, they are living by faith. They are trusting God. They are not fearful of the things around and about them. They're not fearful of the king's command, as Hebrews 11 underlines for us. Neither are they fearful of the crocodiles or fearful of the Egyptian gods, because they believe their God is sovereign in all situations. That's faith. That's real faith. That's the faith that this ordinary couple had. That's the faith that we need as ordinary couples, as ordinary men and women. Faith in a God who is sovereign in every situation. You see, sometimes in our life, things go easy, don't they? Sometimes in our life, we seem to be blessed greatly, and we can forget God in those situations. Sometimes in our life, things are much worse, aren't they? Sometimes we come across circumstances and situations and trials and tribulations, and we say, is God really in control here? Is he really the Lord? Is he really sovereign in my life? And you see, this story says, yes, he is. If he's sovereign over all these Egyptian gods, if he's sovereign over this situation of great danger, he's going to be sovereign in my life too, and I can trust him. And I can, as it were, let go of the issue, the burden, the problem, in the same way that Jochebed let go of that little precious ark and put it down in the water. You and I are to be those who cast our cares upon him, because he is the one who cares for us. Is your faith like that? Could you have done what Jochebed and Amram did? Because you know that God is sovereign in all situations. Because that leads us on, doesn't it, to the fourth and the glorious truth that comes from this passage. And that is that living by faith is rewarded by the God who is pleased. Living by faith is rewarded by the God who is pleased. You see, this woman's simple faith is rewarded in a way that is actually far greater than she could ever have imagined. In fact, this is one of those stories in the Bible that I think we're meant to, well, if not laugh at least we should afford ourselves a smile at it, because it's actually quite a funny story. You know, in Psalm 2, it says that when we try to be sovereign over God and over his anointed, the one who sits in the heavens laughs. And sometimes we have to laugh with him, don't we? You see, there's something quite funny about this, isn't there? Because as the story goes on, Pharaoh's daughter comes, doesn't she? She's going to bathe in the river. So maybe there weren't many crocodiles around, otherwise she wouldn't have done that. I don't know. She sees the ark amongst the rushes. It's not something she'd seen before. So she goes and she opens it, doesn't she? She opens it and there's a baby in there. It's the last thing you expect to see, isn't it? And when she examines the baby, she sees that it's a Hebrew baby. Would have been a circumcised baby. So the evidence was there. She sees it's one of the babies of the Hebrews. Now on the riverbank is Miriam, is Moses' sister. And she has been watching what's been going on. And when this baby is discovered, she steps in. She says, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew maids who can nurse it? And the woman says, well, that's a good idea. Go and get one of the Hebrew women. And so she goes, and of course she gets her mother. She gets Moses' mother. Can you see the irony in that? You know, Pharaoh, his family, are supposed to be destroying all these babies. But now, not only is this baby safe, but this baby is safe back in its mother's arms. And the irony doesn't end there, does it? Because verse 10 says, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I'll give you your wages. So this mother is going to be paid now to look after her own baby. This is the first case of family allowance in history, if you like. The government are going to pay her to look after this baby that she thought was going to be thrown in the river and was bound to die. She's getting state support now to look after her own baby. See how God is turning the tables on these foolish Egyptians who think they can get the better of the sovereign gods. And of course, the irony doesn't end up there, does it? Because it will be through this baby that's drawn out of the water that not many years from now, the whole of the Egyptian army is going to end up at the bottom of the water, at the bottom of the sea. Because this child is the child that's going to lead these people out. This child is the child of God's plan. This child is the child who God in his sovereignty is going to use to rescue Israel and destroy the whole Egyptian army and the firstborn of every family. And this child is saved by Pharaoh's daughter. Now, do you see? He who sits in the heavens is laughing. He says, how dare you hope to destroy my plan? How dare you hope to destroy my people? And you see how God turns the tables. You have a similar story, don't you, in the story of Esther with Haman and how he sets up those gallows, doesn't he, for Mordecai. And he sets it as his great aim in life to get rid of Mordecai. And not just Mordecai, but all the Jewish people. And who is it who ends up on the gallows? It's Haman himself, isn't it? Why? Because the one who sits in the heavens is laughing. And here, this couple, their faith is rewarded. And the reward is actually a physical and an immediate and a tangible reward. Because this child is safe now back home and even being paid for everything it needed. Because Pharaoh's daughter has taken an interest in this child. You see, God rewards faith. Now, we have to be honest, God doesn't always reward faith like this. We can't take this as a, you know, health, wealth and prosperity passage and say, well, you know, as long as you have enough faith, you'll have money coming in and God will bless you physically and materially. It doesn't always work like that. Because after all, God isn't a God who promises always to give us ease and to give us financial rewards and to give us physical, earthly, material blessings. But what he does promise is that if we live by faith, he will reward us one day. That there will be a reward to all of God's people. It may not be in this life, may not be in this world, may not be in our immediate circumstances, but in a sense that doesn't matter. because we're not just creatures of this world and this life and this place. We're creatures of eternity. We're creatures of heaven. We're creatures of everlasting life. And God promises to reward those who trust in him. Hebrews 11 tells us that, doesn't he? Right at the very start of the chapter. And in a sense, this is a great example of it, isn't it? That without faith, it is impossible to please God. He who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. See, Jochebed and Amram lived by faith. They weren't frightened of Pharaoh because they knew the God of heaven. And all of their actions show that. You know, if we, as ordinary men and women, ordinary couples, ordinary individuals, ordinary fathers, mothers, sons, daughters, if we live by faith, God has promised to reward us too. That reward is an eternal reward. It's the reward of heaven, isn't it? The reward of seeing him, of being with him, gazing upon him, knowing his delight and his pleasure forever and ever. So, my friends, are you like Jochebed? Are you like Amram? Do you always look for God's good in a world that's bad? Do you always have an eye on how God has acted in the past, looking for him to act that way in the future? Are you the person who believes that God is sovereign in all the situations of your life? Because if you are, God is a God who will reward you, because he rewards those who diligently seek him. May God help us to be like Amram and Jochebed in our lives from day to day.